Good evening, James McCanny here with My Science Hour. It is March 20th, 2014. Tonight's main science topic, a little bit esoteric, but very important. A number of weeks ago, I already announced this. In fact, this was the reason for the release of my latest book, that the NSA was caught with a little backdoor contract with a company called RSA. And it's amazing how these people deny this when it first is leaked. But the company RSA provides security, encryption, and coding for many businesses around the world. And their annual meeting typically would draw about 25,000 people from businesses all over the world, including government, military, you name it. Anybody big in secure computing would be there. The meeting was boycotted by many of the long-term members and attendees and speakers when they found out that the RSA Corporation had sold for $10 million, a Judas type of sale, the rights to the back door into their secure computing algorithms, none other than to the NSA. Oh, this is amazing. And besides that, the meeting was picketed. There were protests outside by an angry public sentiment that the RSA would have any association at all with the NSA, let alone sell backdoor rights. Now, anyway, this brings up some very interesting topics regarding secure computing, and you may think, well, this is doesn't affect me. Well, it does, because you out there with your personal computer or cell phone or smartphone or whatever have to understand that companies are selling backdoor rights to the NSA. The NSA is paying money to these corporations, and probably, $10 million is not a lot. I bet there was a lot more money passed under the table to the heads of the RSA Corporation to front that purchase. And then they kept it hush-hush while selling their encryption software, claiming it was immutable, unbreakable, the highest quality, selling it to customers, paying big bucks for secure computing rights, when the same company, the RSA Laboratories, was selling the backdoor opening for for $10 million to the NSA. Woo! I'll tell you, folks, it doesn't get any lower than that in the mud and squalor of the business world. So at any rate, I'll be talking a little about some side issues with that. So at any rate, let me go through a laundry list of topics here first. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It happened this past Monday. And being a little bit Irish, probably about 120%, I rather like that day. And of course, on St. Patrick's Day, everybody is Irish. Everybody can be Irish, and that's the one thing about Irish. We don't hold other people out. Doesn't matter where you come from or what your religious or affiliation or the color of your skin. It doesn't matter. Everybody gets to be Irish on that day, and everybody loves it because the Irish are a happy people. And I happen to be one of those happy people. Also, the Irish have been very big in all kinds of industries. There have been great physicists and mathematicians coming out of Ireland. They built the biggest ships. Remember that the Titanic and its sister ship were built in Ireland. Many of the big ocean-going liners, there was a huge shipbuilding industry in Ireland for a long time. So at any rate, happy St. Patrick's Day. Just a quick note, and this is an extremely interesting piece of data that was reported by Tier 2 NASA scientists. Now, we're all privy to the subject of Planet X. There's all kinds of little-minded people out there, let's call them that, who say, oh, Planet X is here. It's in the asteroid belt. It's behind Jupiter. It's now behind the sun. Every comet is Planet X, on and on. And, of course, these people are unwittingly sponsored and in mind control games with the people who want to quell the topic of Planet X. So they have all of that going on, but recently NASA came out with a so-called study result. They have a satellite that is in orbit, and it was meant to catalog all of the infrared, the infrared objects in the sky. And so they were able to catalog infrared objects. Now, objects, if they don't receive sunlight, still can give off infrared heat. And let me qualify this a little bit. Now, there are many assumptions in this announcement. NASA says that it has proven that there are no Planet X objects out to... Let me first start by defining an astronomical unit. It's a measurement of distance in astronomy, and it's the distance from the sun to the Earth. Now, instead of using meters or yards or miles, which are real small compared to astronomical distance, the yardstick, so to speak, of astronomy has been the astronomical unit. Okay, so that gives us the distance from the sun to the Earth as kind of a baseline yardstick to measure things in outer space. And so we can measure objects in the solar system, and they use this as a basis for their announcement. They said that out to 10,000 astronomical units, now that's way, 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 way out there beyond the planets, beyond Pluto, far beyond, they say up to 10,000 astronomical units, there are no Saturn-size objects. Then they say that a result regarding a bigger type of object, up to 26,000 astronomical units, there are no Jupiter-sized objects. And they're saying that they have searched all of outer space in all directions, and this is a result that they have come up with. But excuse me, let's back up a second here, NASA. First of all, we're talking to an agency, or listening to an agency. You don't talk to them, you only listen. You don't talk to them and get responses. And so what we're dealing with here, first of all, is an agency that has a history of lying, covering up data, doctoring data to get a specified result. So first of all, you have to get your hip boots on, the really high hip boots, because you're walking through a field of... you know what? Smelly lies, cover-ups, bad mixed, changed data, falsified photos. Let me see, the long laundry list of NASA lies. So first of all, you have to wade through that. But let's first play devil's advocate and first give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe they did a study. What are the flaws in their study? Well, it goes like this. First of all, infrared objects, they interpret the size of the infrared object by its heat signature. So let's take something the size of Jupiter that's real cold. Okay, now let's take an object the size of, you know, your living room and make it real hot. Not glowing hot, but hot. Okay, now you put those two objects out beyond the solar system. The Jupiter-sized object that's very cold and the little hot rock that's the size of your kitchen. Okay, now the little hot rock would look bigger on the infrared scale than the big Jupiter object that's cold. So there's a basic assumption here that the object you would be looking at in your study has a certain temperature. If it does not have a certain temperature, if it's cold, then it would appear smaller in your infrared signature. So at any rate, that's one of the initial flaws. Secondly, and something I pointed out in all of my work dealing with the Planet X and the discovery, the potential discovery of a Planet X type object, and remember, there are many Planet X type objects. It's strange that this study negates other NASA announcements. About probably 4 or 5 years ago, after the discovery of the first planet besides Pluto called Sedna, it was discovered that, in fact, Sedna had a companion. It was a little planet out there. There were almost immediately 40 new planets of Pluto size discovered. At that point, NASA said they don't know how many of these objects out there, and clearly some of these objects were bigger than Pluto, and if you look at a statistical cross-section of objects that could be in the outer solar system, then what you would find is that there could be a few large objects out there. Then they discovered objects moving through space that were the size of brown dwarfs, completely free of any solar system. And so they said, could these have mixed with comets way out there and thrown them into our solar system, causing a spray or a high frequency of comets to come into the solar system? But they actually discovered these objects and announced them. In fact, they said there are more of these objects, the ones free of a solar system, moving free out there. They said there are more of them out there, and these are Jupiter, Saturn type size objects. There are more of them than there are planets locked into gravitational bonding of a solar system. So isn't that interesting? So at any rate, now what they're saying is that they have searched the infrared region around the solar system, and they have determined that there is no such thing as Planet X out to a certain distance. And of course, things move very slowly out there, so if that were true, that there were no such objects such as Jupiter or Saturn-sized objects out to 10,000 or 26,000 astronomical units, that would mean it would be a very, very long time until anything could possibly come into our solar system. Yet NASA, a number of years ago, made the announcement that they had found many, many, many big objects that were bound to our solar system, and that's when the announcements stopped, the official NASA announcements. And these were objects that were discovered optically with visible light, just like Sedna was discovered with a visible light search from the telescopes in Arizona. And these were not big telescopes. We're talking about 32-inch telescopes, commercial research-grade telescopes, but still, that's a small, small telescope when you think of the big telescopes that are coming online around the world. Additionally, there's one other slight factor here, and this I've pointed out before, that as these objects come in and start to mingle with the solar system, now this is way out beyond the orbit of Pluto, as any big object would come in, it would start to attract, it would start to discharge the solar capacitor, it would start to build a cloud around it of dust and gases, primarily dust, nitrogen gas we know is out there. We see these clouds around other stars. They're incorrectly called planetary nebulae, and they're incorrectly believed to be expulsions of gas from the central star. But what they really are the collection of gases and dust around the star that are held back by the stellar wind, the wind of protons that's constantly emanating from fusion-based stars. Okay, so at any rate, once an object, a Jupiter or Saturn-sized object, starts moving towards the solar system and gets into that region out there, it starts to discharge the solar capacitor, it starts to charge up negatively in the region around it, and starts to draw in dust and gas. That dust and gas shroud blocks the infrared signature of the central object. makes it extremely difficult to find. So you will not find this in your study, in your all-sky survey study with an instrument that's looking for pinpoint sources of infrared light. And so anyway, once we see the NASA announcement there is no Planet X, and they somehow proven this with an infrared study, you can see the long list of caveats that have to be addressed. But, as I said, you don't get to talk to NASA. You can't call up NASA or the scientists that did this study and say, hey, dude, you forgot to mention all of these caveats to your study. So you can't conclusively say anything other than within the narrow scope of your survey, your all-sky infrared survey, within the very narrow scope of this, you're claiming you have not found anything, but you must be making some assumptions about the temperature profile of these large objects. And as I said, a big object with a very low heat temperature profile would give off a very low infrared signature and would be mistaken for an object that's very small. In fact, there are many other, let's call this, you have to look at this for what it is. It's second and third level interpretations of data. And given that those interpretations are right and all inclusive, then you might have a situation where there's some significance to this study. And you could draw conclusions. But as I said, you have to include all the caveats. And of course, NASA doesn't. And you can't talk to them. You can't call up and get a straight answer from them. That's why NASA really means never a straight answer. And so this study has no meat to it. But of course, immediately, the little shills that NASA pays out there, the little apologists, jump up and down, scream on their little internet blogs, and oh, look at, they've proven that there is no Planet X. Well, it contradicts NASA's own study released many years ago in which they said there are thousands and thousands of Jupiter-sized objects associated with this solar system. But of course, they don't want to talk about that because, in fact, when these Kuiper objects, as they're now called, were discovered, the Sedna objects and the 40 new objects that were almost immediately discovered, and then a whole array of them afterwards, NASA said that they had only discovered 0.1% of the objects out there associated with our solar system, and that some of them were big. When Michael Brown was at the news conference where they announced Sedna, I just happened to be one of the call-in news reporters at that meeting. I didn't ask any questions, but I got to hear the interview, and of course the other news agencies were online, they were on telephone, bridged into a conference call, and the man from Reuters asked a question regarding Sedna. And this is funny, because he goes to Michael Brown, he says, hey, what if this object ever came into the solar system? And in his naivety, Michael Brown answers, wow, if that were a comet and it came into the solar system, it'd be the biggest comet we ever saw. Within minutes, the astronomical community was reeling and backpedaling, trying to pretend that he never said that. Because you see, these new green young buck astronomers that come out of graduate school don't know about Velikovsky. They were never taught. They were hidden from this information, and they're green behind the ears beyond belief. So Michael Brown, in his naivety, in his greenness as a new young astronomer, just happened to make by mistake a discovery. It wasn't his discovery. He happened to be on the team of the automated telescope search that made the discovery. But his response to the Reuters reporter's question, he said, if this thing ever came into the inner solar system, it would be the biggest comet we ever saw. Well, that just verified 100% what Velikovsky was talking about. That these, and the point was that Sedna did not have an orbit that would draw it into the inner solar system, but as they discovered dozens and dozens of other Kuiper Belt objects, which were in very strange orbits, and then some of them, of course, were bigger, and of course NASA stopped reporting at that point. The data went underground. So anyway, kind of a lengthy explanation, but a very necessary explanation of the so-called new NASA announcement that there is no Planet X. And so what's the reality? Well, first of all, don't believe all the nutcases sending out emails that everything you see is Planet X or it's in the... and also there's some jokers running around saying there's a black Death Star and it's just behind Jupiter. It's going to pop out and jump at us any day now. No, that's all baloney made up by people who sit in grandma's basement and don't have anything better to do and somehow imagine that they're important people. So at any rate, if you get emails or things like that, just consider the source. Send it off to the spam bucket and inform your ISP that these are spam, and so they'll get on spam lists and stop these ridiculous constant announcements. Just a quick update. The winter weather here has been just horrendous. It's ongoing. Clearly this winter has broken all records, for all records regarding winter. The wind in the southern states has been horrendous lately, very atypical of the springtime, heading into March, etc. Should be a time when you're hitting 70 and 80 degree days, really nice what you would call golf days, to go golfing. But that's not the case. They're just barely starting to have some semblance of spring days, but also a lot of wind, which was very interesting. So that's a very interesting issue. I think we're heading into some interesting electrical currents that we're connecting with in the solar system. There have been some surprise aurora displays that had no correlation to solar wind, solar storms, or anything else. So we're obviously connecting into some strange electrical patterns out there. And this is common. This is something that is explainable by just the average conditions in the solar system. We're living in an electrical solar system. The electrical currents are passing through the solar system, and it's not unusual to get they're snaking around out there, and they're very unpredictable. Unless we had satellites in all over the solar system, which we may have, you may have paid for them, but nobody's given you the data, of course. In fact, I suspect that's the case with the military. They probably have satellites all over the place measuring solar conditions. But that information doesn't filter down to you, the public. But at any rate, it's not due to anything we can visibly see as far as electrical alignments in the solar system. So basically what we're dealing with here are currents, and these currents actually can happen somewhat at random as we work our way through a solar system. For example, let's go back to the backyard bug killer. And typically this device discharges along the path where the bug flies and zaps the bug, and the bug flies down and then it sits there statically. But there's a certain term you call in any electrical circuit or in any battery or any capacitor, there's a term called leakage currents. These are currents that occur, and once they start, they tend to be short-lived, but they can occur at any place, in the capacitor, in the battery, because the battery or the capacitor is trying to discharge internally. It's trying to do that, but in the case of the sun and the solar system, we have the constant building of that capacitor with the solar wind. In a battery, you have a chemical process that's maintaining that capacitor, etc. But the term leakage current has to do with small, relatively insignificant electrical currents that occur at random in these devices or in the solar system. And it appears that that's what we're seeing, because there's no major solar system object that we've been aligned with. So at any rate, that's just an interesting topic. And of course, like I said, random unexplained auroras and high winds at times. This is due to the fact that the electrical currents are connecting down to the surface of the Earth, causing low pressure cells which generate the swirling wind patterns. And so anyway, that's a bit of a discussion. But in general, the sun, giving a little bit of a solar update here, the sun is very weak. Basically, we're not having any flaring. The sun is basically flatlined. And so it's in the C range of what you might call flares, but we're not having any flares. The sunspots are not developing. If there is any activity, it's just a little bit of increased solar wind activity, but the sun is pretty much flatlined. And one of my personal big worries is that I'm wondering if we are going to have a crop this summer. Could we be heading into a time when world food would become a shortage and severe problems coming down the line, simply because the sun is not pumping out sufficient energy to warm up our planet? And of course, this is part of the severe weather. But the other issue that's going on is a lot of weather has been controlled this winter. There have been a lot of controlled, what you would call climate control, regarding the Pacific Ocean and the normal currents of water and wind that are drawn off the Pacific to fuel our winters. And a lot of control activity going on there. So anyway, once again, there is no dark death star regarding coming into Earth. Here's a topic that there's a movie coming out. It's called Noah. I think Noah is the name of the movie, but it talks about it's starred by Russell Crowe, one of my favorite actors. I just love many of his movies. But this movie, and of course, I think he's going to be great in this movie. But the topic, and I think it's very interesting. I saw some sequels, trailers for the movie, and very interesting, where he builds an ark, but it's not a big ship-looking ark. It's an ark. It's a big square rectangular ark, and I thought, well, that's interesting. That's a very interesting and practical twist to the question, how did Noah build the ark and what did it look like, etc. But it very much follows the biblical specifications for Noah's ark. But when it comes time for the flood, I'm expecting torrential rain to come out of the sky, and all of a sudden it starts shooting up out of the ground. And I'm going, wait a minute, dude, Hollywood, wait, stop. The Noah's flood was 40 days and 40 nights of torrential rain. It's supposed to come out of the sky, not shooting up out of the ground. And so I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa, Nelly, or Noah, or whatever. Talk about misinformation in a Hollywood movie when you get right to the punchline and it starts to rain. No, it comes shooting up out of the ground. Wait a minute, how on earth does that happen? You're trying to make the Noah story believable, like it's a part of history, and all of a sudden the water comes shooting up out of the ground? Excuse me, folks. I'm not sure what they have in mind with this movie, but it's certainly a major piece of misinformation. And this is typical of Hollywood movies. So I'm not going to go into, you know, criticism of Hollywood, other than they distort things, and this is done on purpose to basically distort these topics for the general public. Okay, no more about that. The my annual hurricane prediction. It's something I generally do around January, but I usually give a prediction of planetary and lunar alignments and other type of factors in the solar system that would produce severe hurricanes. Literally, there are none for the year 2014. And so there are a couple small nuances here that I'll talk about. On October 16th, we have a Mercury-Earth alignment, and this can sometimes be an issue. But typically, if that's all that's going on, really not a lot. It's nothing to write home about. The moon is at 90 degrees and has no effect. It's in third quarter. After the full moon, it's in other words, a half moon after the full moon is the third quarter moon. And so the moon is at 90 degrees. It's not even a full moon. It's not even near a new moon. And that was October 16th of this year, 2014. On June 19th, there is another Mercury-Earth alignment. And oddly enough, the moon is once again in the third quarter, 90 degrees out of phase, and not a contributing factor. So those are the only small caveats this year. Nothing that I would even nothing I would put down as a dangerous date or anything like that. So literally, there are no hurricane dates on this year that jump out and obvious. In other words, additionally, I looked into 2015, and 2015 really is devoid of major planetary alignments, electrical alignments and conditions. So unless we get some cometary activity that would really change this somehow, 2014, we're looking at a dud year for hurricanes, and of course, unless we get a bunch of manipulated storms, and that's always a possibility. We'll have to watch and see as those transpire. But also, just a quick announcement, in 2015, Mercury and Jupiter and Venus on May 5th, 2015, have an alignment which is very interesting. Now, the thing that's interesting here is not so much that there's an alignment between those three planets, an electrical alignment that is in line with the solar wind path, but the Earth is off 90 degrees to the side of both Mercury and Venus. Now, there are effects that happen in these kind of configurations. One of them I talked about extensively on one show. I dedicated an entire show to something called the Ashen Light of Venus. Ashen is como like ash, the residue after a fire, you have ash. So ashen light refers to kind of a dusky type of light that appears on the dark side of Venus under certain conditions. And on January, what did I say? May 5th, 2015, we will have those conditions and a very good situation with Mercury and Jupiter aligned with Venus. Now, when I did my study of ash and light, one of the things that I contributed to that field of study, which had never been acknowledged or understood before, was the fact that there were other planetary alignments occurring at that time. During the time of, and the people that studied these, there were a couple gentlemen that did an entire lifetime of study regarding the ashen light of Venus, and they reported the dates and the times and the recordings, but they never really made the connection that the other planets were aligning with Venus and the Sun at that time. So I went back and revisited the data. Now, this is what's important, especially for kids. If you're studying science, you have to keep good records, especially in this case, studying the ashen light of Venus. These gentlemen kept extremely good records of the dates and the times and the observations and exactly what they saw. So I could go back wind the solar system back in time, and lo and behold, there were other electrical alignments with Venus at the time, with the Sun and Venus, and those were the factors that were important in creating the ashen light of Venus. So here we go, May 5th, 2015, which is a little ways off, but you could start marking that on your calendar. We have Venus, Mercury, which is into the inside of Venus, and Jupiter, all very nicely electrically aligned. And so we could see some ashen light of Venus. In fact, we it's rather an atmospheric type of effect. And since Mercury doesn't have an atmosphere, it's probably not going to be that readily available, visible on Mercury. But we could also possibly see some sunward spike activity. And this would be possibly difficult for the average man on the street to see, because you would need specialized equipment. With Venus, it might be a little bit easier to see, because Venus sports an X-ray pattern out on its sunward side, and that may enhance the X-ray signature of Venus on the sunward side. But there again, you would need some severely specialized equipment to look at that. So just another quick announcement on the tap water crisis in the United States. This is amazing. This is truly, truly amazing. I have done quite a bit of research on fresh water, and there is a real crisis in the United States. Now, understand that this is fabricated. It's fabricated because of the lack of control. The EPA has standards. I've talked about this before, that the standards for EPA pollution in water sources, etc., are flawed, because they allow companies to discharge a certain amount, and they say, well, that's within specifications. But the problem is that over the decades and centuries now, the accumulation of chemicals has grown to the point where underground water sources and above ground water sources are severely contaminated with all kinds of trace elements, chemicals, bacteria, viruses, drugs, pharmaceutical drugs. Oh my goodness, the list is just unbelievable. And so anyway, that's why I talk about this, that you have to start carrying your water filtration system with you when you travel, if you go on vacation, if you go camping, if you take the family, or if you go. And so this is something that I saw coming a long time ago. That's why I only sell the water filters on my sales page, on my webpage, jmccsci.com. But understand that if you have an inline water filtration system in your house, you can't take that with you. If the power goes off, if the city power goes off, you will not have filtered water. You have no way to filter water. And so the systems that I sell are not only for daily use, but they are they can be easily taken with you on vacation or in your suitcase. The little water filter, that we call it the mini, or the personal travel emergency water filter. I would say that recently in my own travels, that little water filter probably could have saved my life, but certainly saved me from being sick. And here's what you do. You use your water filter, and then look at the filter element, which is kind of a creamy white color when it's new. And you start to see the pollution, just the dust and the grime pollution that is in tap water. This is the water that comes out of the faucet. You see the unbelievable amount of residue, but you cannot see the chemicals. Now, these filter elements are in three pieces, or three parts. It's a three-phase filtration. First of all, it has a ceramic filter on the outside, and that is to trap any particles down to sub-micron size. Then there's the charcoal activated charcoal in the center, and that removes chemicals. Now, the new, what I call the GF filters, which are offered on my webpage, take out a longer list of chemicals than the prior generation of filters. And so chromium, Clorox, the list just goes on and on. Heavy metals, aluminum, iron, aluminum that are trace pollutants in water. It takes all of these out. Now, how do you take a full-size, kitchen-size water filter on vacation? Well, you take it apart, you take the water filter element out, and you wrap it in maybe a washcloth, and then you put your clothes. You dry the water filter, you put your clothes, you put other, maybe a towel or whatever, around it, and put it in your suitcase. And when you get there, you open it up, and you have your own filtered water right there. So I'll tell you, I would not go any place anymore. And if it were a sporting team, if it were a group, an educational group, or whatever, church group, I would tell people to go, especially if you're going to a foreign country. Oh, my goodness. The ability to take your water filter with you is very important, or to use it in case of an emergency. If the water goes off, a lot of people are waking up to the fact that they have to filter their water to get the pollution from the Fukushima radiation. The pre-filter has been, the people are finally waking up to my pre-filter, that it takes out the residue that the radiation attaches to. And it has to be done in a low-pressure environment so that the weak bonds, the weak ionic bonds of the radiation are not broken and flow through the water filter and into your water and pollute your water filtration system. So I always say that inline water filters are great for your kitchen. In fact, I sell a couple myself, but they are not for emergency and they are not for radiation removal. The really only good solution to radiation removal is my pre-filter. And that's on the home page. It fits any standard modern water filter, gravity water filter. And it's something that more and more people are waking up to. Okay, well, enough of that. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, short for jmccsci.com. jmccsci.com. And by the way, with any water filter purchase, you get the free copy of my recent ebook, Water, entitled Water. And also now you're going to get a copy of the new release, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. Okay, so at any rate, become water independent. That's all I can tell people. Just a brief update, as Windows dumps the XP operating system, something is becoming very clear. I've told people don't move to Vista, certainly a bombshell bad operating system, but Windows 7 and 8 are both really bad systems. They're full of holes and full of government eavesdropping technology. So it's something you just got to get away from Microsoft. You got to get away from Windows. And so what's my recommendation? Really, the only practical solution on the market is a Mac. And for long-term stability, if you're trying to save money and you think, well, gee, I don't want to spend money now and I want to just stick with an easy upgrade to Windows system, just remember that in a couple of years, they're going to be dumping those operating systems and forcing you to buy new hardware, PCs, desktop, laptop, and cell phones if you're based on Windows. You're going to be forced to probably sell your device or get rid of your device and buy a new one. So the Windows option is not a cheap one. It's a trap to make you keep paying and paying and paying, and it also allows the back door for the government to snoop into everything you do So at any rate, Windows is not a wonderful option. One of my least favorite people on the planet, around behind the Clintons and the Bushes, and a lot of the other corrupt politicians in Washington, is a guy named Billy Gates. Really don't have any time for Billy. He sold out, made a lot of money, because he sold out your privacy rights to the government. So, no time for Billy. He's a guy that I see his smiling face someplace, all I think about is all the money he made by selling you down the river. Okay, on to the main science topic tonight, talking about a very esoteric topic, but something that affects you directly. It was March 5th, 2007, that I released my book, Calculate Primes. And that has been a very solid, steady seller. Mathematicians, engineers, scientists all over the world realizing that finally the oldest mathematics problem in the world, to put the prime numbers in some kind of a rhyme or reason and understanding, that was accomplished in that book. That was the public release of that work. Right now, as we speak, I'm releasing a new book. It's a supplement to the Calculate Primes book, and that was released, this announcement was made a couple weeks ago. And so some people have already received theirs. Some people are still waiting for a copy of their book that's in an e-book format only. It's called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. Now, RSA Laboratories is a corporation that has used the cryptographic public key format concept to sell security to computer systems. This is both for firewalls and for transmission of data, protection of data in secure computing systems. And you possibly heard of 128-bit encryption or 256-bit encryption or more advanced forms. Could be like 2048 encryption that might be used in very high-level government applications. But as I said at the beginning of this show, they have a little bit of dirty dealing, a little bit of dirty laundry in the closet that was discovered. And that was the key for me. That was kind of the impulse that I needed to publish this book called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. And this is a supplement to the Calculate Primes book. Now, remember that the real damage, so to speak, of destroying the RSA encryption codes using prime numbers was followed immediately after my book Calculate Primes came out. It was a solution that nobody ever imagined would happen. And so firm was that assumption in the world of mathematics and encryption and secure computing that the industry, the worldwide secure computing industry, based its entire secure everything they did in hardware and software was based on RSA encryption codes using prime numbers. And very simply, here's how it works, just to take away a little bit of the mystery of this. There's with supercomputers, they determined a very large number. They found very large numbers that only had two factors, and the two factors were prime numbers about the same magnitude, of about the same size. Now, to the way this worked was using a algorithm that took the digits of the very big number and ran the data through an algorithm that changed the data. Okay. Now, the decoding algorithm that would be on the receiver side needed the two prime number factors to operate. Without those two prime numbers, you could not decode the data, so it was very secure. So only those people who had bought into the encryption system and paid their dues would get the two prime numbers factors and be allowed to use the encryption method, and everybody else would be blocked out from using it or deciphering. So it was deemed a very secure way of transmitting data. Okay, so anyway, with that said, it comes down to the whole method depends on the inability of people to quickly factor large numbers or to identify large prime numbers rapidly. Typically, it would take large amounts of computing time on supercomputers to crack the code, so to speak. So they were deemed extremely safe. In fact, mathematicians would calculate how long, using standard computing techniques, how long it would take to break the codes. In other words, what that really means is how long would it take for someone trying to hack into a secure computing system, how long would it take them to find the two prime number factors? And so at any rate, as soon as my book came out, I was kind of inundated with calls from engineers, from military, from corporations that built military hardware and software and military satellites, and other people, attorneys who had worked in the encryption business. And so it was immediately understood at all levels of secure computing that the encryption codes, the RSA encryption codes using prime numbers, was broken. And this eventually got to the point where Michael Chertoff, who was the head of Homeland Security at the time, got up on the podium and he said, all of secure computing is in complete disarray. We don't know how bad it is. We don't have any ability to determine how bad it is. And we don't know how to fix it. That was the Michael Chertoff announcement that followed the release about a couple years, actually, after the release of my book, Calculate Primes. But within a couple of weeks after the release of that book, the RSA Laboratory, the corporation that builds the secure computing encryption code systems and sells them to the government and private business and the military, they had what they called the RSA Challenge. It was a series of large numbers that they offered on their webpage and said, if you can break these down into their component factors of prime numbers, then we will pay you $200,000 for value for some of them, etc. Those prizes came down, and there was a reason for that, because they knew that my work broke the codes. Any third grader with a home computer now could break very large numbers into their component factors, and so the RSA encryption codes were no longer usable. What happened? Well, over the years and decades prior to that, the use of RSA encryption codes was everywhere. It was in hardware, it was in software, it was in military applications for ground and air and satellite and every place else. And the way secure computing, either hardware or software, is developed is the people are compartmentalized. The tasks are broken up into small pieces so that nobody has an idea, a concept of the big picture. Now, this is something that I worked in for about 10 years. I worked in a corporation that built high-security telecommunications computers. These were sold into IBM, large-scale IBM mainframe computer centers, and connected these computer centers around the world. That's what I did for a period of about 10 years of my career. And that was also announced when I put out the book Calculate Primes. So it's a subject that I know quite a bit about. It's a subject that I worked in industry, and also I had the savvy and the background in mathematics to solve the oldest mathematics problem in the world. So within literally weeks of the release of my book Calculate Primes, all of the RSA challenge encryption numbers were, all of the prizes were removed from their webpage. no longer were they going to offer a prize for somebody to break the codes, because they knew that it would be very easily done. So anyway, let's fast forward up to the year 2014. A couple weeks ago, the RSA Corporation held a meeting. And as I said, normally this would bring attendance of around 25,000 people out in San Francisco in late February. But most of the people boycotted this meeting. It was highly protested because it was discovered that the RSA Corporation had a backdoor deal with the NSA, and while it was selling and marketing its encryption codes, now these are other types of encryption codes that have been developed and put into use since the release of my book, Calculate Primes, but they were selling the backdoor entryway into these encryption systems to the NSA, allowing the corporate databases to be accessed by the NSA. So at any rate, quite an unbelievable set of circumstances, but it just shows the level of corruption in modern business, in modern government, etc. And it also, I want to mention this, even though large-scale, high security computing systems are using newer forms of encryption, the old RSA prime number systems are still being used and pawned off onto you, the public. At any rate, my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, goes into all of this in a lot more detail. It's a very complicated topic, but and this, by the way, is not a major release. I would not call this a major release. It's somewhat of a minor release, but I'm realizing that there are groups out there that are very interested in this topic. So anyway, I just want to promote the idea that this book is a very important book. It's something that everybody should really read and understand. You do not have to be a top-level mathematician to understand it. You can read just the book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, and get a good understanding of this whole industry, etc. But if you really want to start hacking into government facilities, etc., you would have to read the Calculate Primes book also. Not that I'm encouraging people to do anything illegal, but there's an information war going on out there, and this is one small David versus the Colossus Goliath of the government to fight back. At any rate, I'm just about out of time here. Remember to go to my webpage. You get the new book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, for free if you make any water filter purchase order, plus the ebook Water. And or you can buy the new book for $13.95. Just scroll down on the sales page to where the books are, and you will find it listed there. At any rate, and make sure you become water independent. The website, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.